government, freedom, law, education, health, free energy, money, debt. Awake Radio, deconstructing the dream world, one lie at a time.
You didn't think it was going to be that easy, did you?
You know, for a second there,
yeah, I kind of did.
Of the Starship Enterprise, its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God, I still got my hair! And what on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This... It's truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
Flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts? Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean... That says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now. This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future. Portable television studio. Gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
everybody. Old Shaziz here out here at my Mad Science Laboratory. Hope everybody's doing well. I sent a link into the various chat rooms of a company called Generac. And it's basically a home generator system that you can use in case your power goes out. And apparently this one here ties right into the grid, so it monitors your electricity, and if you have any problems, then it will basically kick on the generator and excuse me, and give you power back. Well, for those of you that can afford it, that's a pretty good simple solution already out of the gate, already out of the box. They got all kinds of warranty programs with that thing that you can get in case anything breaks down on it. Meanwhile, you know, I've showed people all kinds of different ways via my video how to tap into the energy of the earth and build generators out of junk. So, for those of you who can actually afford to go get one of these Generac systems, that'd be probably a worthwhile thing until all of us in the alternative energy get together and get all this stuff situated. And I can guarantee you that I myself personally have been working day and night on all kinds of different systems trying to get things to where you don't have to pay for electricity. The biggest problem I would have to say with the whole situation is the resources and the funding and basically finding parts and stuff like that. It slows a person down. So a lot of projects end up having to get put on the back burner until you either track down a part or you find a part. And since I refuse to take any donations towards funding this process, it takes a little bit longer because, you know, I've been saying free energy. I'm not going to patent or charge anybody for any design that I come up with. You know, whether the other people in the alternative energy community choose to do that or whatever, that's that's between them and pretty much it's up to them. Myself personally, I believe energy ideas should be shared freely to all the nations of the world. You know, they say we got an energy crisis, and I'm not a believer in that. I don't believe in global warming. I don't believe in all the craziness that's going on in this world. I know that energy's free. And so with that said, I will continue to work on all kinds of systems. If you happen to skim through some of my YouTube videos out there, it's like 160 some odd YouTube videos. There's everything in there for mad science. You got all kinds of crazy. You got all kinds of good ideas. Little mini wind turbines. Shows how to build a few different types of generators out of essentially junk. You know, instead of throwing away that old microwave, do a little modification and use some parts out of that microwave to make you a generating system for worst case scenario. Now keep in mind that, it's a little tough when you're working with junk, but it can be done. My whole idea for doing things the way that I have been doing them, to run it from basically recycled materials, is that your average Joe can't afford one of these systems made by Generac. You know, although they're really good systems and they have all kinds of capabilities, such as you can check them from your computer and see what's doing and check your energy usage and all that kind of stuff, the average Joe can't afford them. From what I understand, I gave these folks a call the other night, and they range anywhere from $1,900 U.S. to all the way up to $4,500 and above. They use these a lot of industrial business modulars use these things when they're out on job sites and stuff like that. So I wanted to at least share that link with you so that you can do a little bit of research into it, because if you had an opportunity to get one of these things and worst case scenario happened and the power grid went down, you would still have continuous power enough to run your entire house. And they also they work off of either natural gas or propane as well. And if you've done any research into hydrogen cells and stuff like that, I'm positive that these same units could be modified to run off of either wood gasifier or a hydrogen cell. It is a already built, pre-made system that you can get a hold of, and so if you do have the capabilities and the funding, I would recommend at least looking into it and listening to what these folks have to say. Now, for my personal use, I wouldn't want one that would run off of natural gas because I don't have natural gas hookups where I'm at. I have access. I could get a propane tank in and run it off of propane, but once again, you know, there's an extra cost in there. However, if I was to go ahead and do one of these particular style systems, I would be looking into powering it, fueling it with hydrogen or wood gasifier. Those are two things that are readily accessible. You know, you can always get water and you can always get wood that you can use to burn to get gas or fuel. And so with that said, that's the reason why I brought that up. My friend Simply Steve, or Steve, just Steve, I'm going to try to call him up real quick here. I had a little trouble with Skype and I lost him from the call there. Let's see if we can get him up on here. Maybe we can even get Muddy to join in on this conversation. Hey, do we got you back?
How you doing, Shiz?
Yeah, sorry about that earlier. We had a little technical difficulty with my Skype there. Skype's always trying to get me to upgrade to the Pro Edition or something like that.
Oh, that's what you get from being purchased by large corporations. They always want to sell you stuff you don't need.
Yeah, well, I noticed that YouTube and Google essentially they force you into changes every time you turn around. You get up there and your YouTube channel's changed, and they start you up a new page on Google Plus and everything else. They're like enough to drive you to drinking, man. If I didn't have such a important mission here, then I would, you know, I'd just dump that all to heck.
There used to be a time when you'd make a deal and that was the deal.
Yeah.
They didn't have to change it every day.
And yeah, you get used to it and you know where all the buttons are, and then bam, they change it on you again.
Such is the way of life. So you were talking about home backup emergency generators, or generators to run your home from.
Yeah, these Generac systems, that I've been doing a little research on them, and a lot of companies use them on job sites to run their office modulars and stuff. And these particular units, they can actually put them out to your house, so they will run either off of natural gas or propane. And like I was saying, you could even modify these to run off of hydrogen cells or a wood gasifier system. And the reason why I put that out there is because, you know, it takes a while to try to do what it is that myself and a few of the other alternative energy guys are doing out here, trying to find things that are already off the store shelf and, you know, use those for your parts. And, you know, with pretty much a budget where I'm self-funded, you know, then it's a slow process. And so with that said, in the meantime, if somebody has the opportunity to afford one of these things, they range anywhere from $1,900 U.S. to $4,500 and up, depending on, you know, all the tricks, the nifty gizmos you want. You can actually talk to this thing with your computer and see what it's doing and watch your power usage and such. But it's an already built generator. It can get you off the grid, you know, like today if you could afford one, but you'd still have a fuel cost entailed with it if you're going to run it off of natural gas or propane. But if you was to modify it to either hydrogen or wood gasifier, it's a ready-made solution. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've just dropped a link into the Awake chat there and the Knights of the Round Table chat as well. Of gasification of plastic containers. So
oh, yeah, I heard something about that over in England where they were taking taking plastic bottles and turning it into petrol. Is that what you...
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool.
But, you know, even if you run out of diesel, well, not so much diesel, but if you have a petrol generator and that, you can't get access to the fuel. There's other ways, and there's people out there that are experimenting with it all the time. Certainly worth looking into.
Well, I agree with you, brother. I mean, you know, we're all about solutions, and sometimes solutions don't come fast because it takes a lot of research. But if every time I come across things like this, I share them with everybody, like solar panels, you know. I mean, they're top dollar sometimes. You know, it costs you a lot of money to get enough solar panels to run your entire house or the batteries to actually do it. But, you know, it's going to take a bit of an investment, you know, on your part to, even if you want to go about it the junk way, you know. You got to get the junk to take apart and put the parts together to make your own homemade generators. I'm just trying to show people every option available. You can produce electricity in worst case scenario. It's everywhere.
Well, part of the reason why I always liked the name Mad Science was because, to my mind, a lot of science and scientists are mad. I mean, with the problems we've got in the world with accommodation, with being able to be fed, with having infrastructure to supply you with what you need in the ways of fresh water, sewage systems, street lighting. You know, if you've got parts of area that are around swamps, the swamps need draining, or you need to move somewhere else, which, you know. But we have scientists that spend a lot of their time on pointless projects that don't really further humanity and seem to be involved entirely around the acquisition of profits by large corporations. So mad science is actually to try and find a solution to the problems we do have in the world, rather than trying to find solutions for problems that don't exist yet.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it kind of sickens me because the point is that a lot of these guys out here will say just about anything that somebody with an agenda tells them to say, as long as they can keep their funding. And, excuse me, my lab, like I said, is totally self-funded, with the exception of maybe a few pennies that I might get off of my YouTube videos, buy me some wire or something like that, maybe a few magnets, but, you know, it's a little tough, but if I can do this with recycled junk, then the average Joe can do it. And that's, to me, the most important thing. What do you think?
Ah, yeah. I mean, have a look around the house. See what you got lying around that you haven't used in a couple of years and fiddle with it. Why not? Soldering iron will cost you $20.
Yeah, if it's not doing anything anyway, if it's just sitting around growing dust, do a little exploration and see what's made of. Because, you know, I keep telling everybody, the average Joe has a gold mine in their house. They don't even realize it. Literally, if you've got old computers, you've got gold and silver and, you know, other things like little fans and such. And there's a lot of good parts in a lot of different things that, you know, just use your homemade MacGyver skills and you'd be surprised what you could come up with.
Oh, yeah. Well, MacGyver was always a man of peace, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I liked some of his ideas, man. He could get out of anything with a gum wrapper.
And he was intergalactic space traveler too.
Yeah, he done all kinds of stuff. Man gets around. But I guess the point of this whole entire episode here on Shaziz Mad Science is that I want everybody to be self-contained. The world we're living in, and I'm not a doomsdayer by any means. Everybody who knows me knows that I don't subscribe to doomsday scenarios. However, I'm not stupid either. You know, if you look out at the world and the current events and the way that the supposed representation of the representatives of this world are actually running this joint, you can see with your own two eyes, man. If you're getting ready to head off a cliff, chances are you might want to start stepping on the brakes. What do you think?
Oh, most definitely. We're relying on a lot of people to do a lot of things for us that we don't need.
Yeah.
Didn't get more complicated than that, really.
You know, you showed me a video of how to make a lead crystal battery, and that's just one of many ways to make a battery, but it was really good, valuable information. So the solutions are there. All you got to do is click on these links and check them out. Share them with your friends. Because, you know, right now, you have the luxury of the internet, and you have the luxury of being able to see you know, these videos and downloading the information and storing it away for, you know, a later date or something like that. But if the power grid goes down and you haven't done any research whatsoever, you're pretty much at the mercy of the man. You know, you won't know how to do your own gardening. You won't know how to forage around for food. These radio networks like Awake Radio and We Roar Radio and Shaziz Radio, and there's so many more. Granada Steve was kind enough to actually send me to a page that has a whole bunch of different alternative media. And these alternative medias, if you can support them, support them. You know, granted, you got to watch out. There's a few alternative medias out there just trying to make a few pennies, but you're at least getting the information. You know, you're at least getting the truth as opposed to, you know, the mainstream media's agenda kind of news. And so with that said, you know, support Awake Radio, support We Roar Radio. Go over and, you know, become a member in their chat room or something like that, you know. Or, you know, if you got some sort of information that you can pass on for anything to do with gardening, alternative medicine, alternative energy, anything. See, this is about piling all these ideas on the table so that everybody has access to the information and can do something with it. What do you think, Steve?
Well, there's tons and tons. There's probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of solution-based videos on YouTube and around the web in general. But start with what you need first.
Yeah, I agree.
If your water isn't very fresh, then look into what takes to put a well in.
Well, I like to prioritize, so to speak. I can do without lights because, you know, there's still an old invention called a candle and, you know, or a torch, you know. Worst case scenario, I'll have me a candle or a torch in my cave. But as far as water, now that should be your number one priority. There are all kinds of alternative methods by which you can do the same thing that nature does and filter your water. You know, if you think about how nature actually filters water, you know, it goes down onto the ground and through the soil and all the little sands and the rocks and finally works its way down into the water table. And by the time it gets down there and it doesn't have access to sunlight, it starts to clean itself up. And so nature is a really good filter. And so I always say, if you pay attention to nature, nature will teach you a lot of things, and filtering water is one of those things. You need to know this kind of stuff because, you know, if you look into the way the water system, I got fortunate in the area that I'm at. They don't put fluoride in the water. They don't put extra additives in the water. I live out in the country area where the water company out here, they pretty much take the water straight off and make sure that there's no contaminants in the water, and then they pass it on down the line. So my water's fairly safe down here. You know, you got to worry about calcium buildup in your hot water heater, you know, because it's natural water, so yeah, you got to look out for things like that. But as far as worrying about fluoride and chlorine and all the other crud that they put up inside the city water, you don't have that problem out here where I'm at. I'm fortunate for that at this point. You know, there's a lot to be said for some good old fresh water. So if you can look around you and see what's going on, you know, find out what they're putting in your local water, you know. See what they add to it. There's got to be a list of what they do to your water to treat it before it actually comes out your pipe there. So learn how to filter your own water, and then whenever worst case scenario, you'll be all right. What do you think, Steve?
collecting water is really easy anyway. It depends on what part of the planet you're on. But where I live, we have quite high levels of humidity in Ireland most of the time. So if you need to collect a glass of water, you literally, all you got to do is get a big old square tarpaulin and cut holes directly in the middle and have the outside edges pointing up and the inside edges pointing down into a bowl. And when you wake up in the morning, there'll be a load of water in there.
Well, also, there's one other solution for a place with a lot of humidity. You know what a dehumidifier is, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, dehumidifiers will pull the humidity out of the air, and basically, if you've ever seen a dehumidifier, after it's running for a while, it has a little pan in the bottom of it that you have to empty out every so often because it builds up water inside there.
What we've been doing is when we've been going out camping, we stick the tarpaulin up overnight. By the time you get up in the morning, you've got water you can make a cup of tea with. There's nothing in it. Literally.
That's great. See, even that's another good idea. And if you know about condensation, then you'll know how to actually get water, because there's other methods by which they use out in deserts and stuff to get some moisture enough to survive on and stuff like that. If the inside of your container has fresh air inside there, and it's warmer outside and cooler inside, you build up some condensation and basically turn the hydrogen and oxygen into water and basically be able to survive. So there are methods.
Well, a lot of the hospitals use water aquification systems where they take water out of the air because they can't give patients fluoridated water, especially in Ireland.
Well, that's a good thing. So, you know, even that's a good, if you could find a link to some medical supplies where they actually have those type of machines, that'd be something worth looking into. A cheap version of what I believe you're talking about would be to go out and get you a little dehumidifier, because they do work.
Yeah, the only problem with the dehumidifiers is some of the materials they use on the elements leave heavy metals in the water.
Yeah, well, I hadn't really thought about that portion of the deal. However, I'm sure that there's a way around it if you can see how the thing works and build your own. And essentially, like I said, you know, if it's, let's say it's 90 degrees outside and you have your dehumidifier, it's cranked up to about 100 degrees, you got a temperature difference in there that at some point will create condensation, so you could actually build your own dehumidifier.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of ways of doing it.
But these are things that need to be thought about, you know, now, while we have access to all this information. I tell everybody, you know, we're in a golden age right now. And people right now should be, you know, basically, you know, it's kind of like, you know, every summer the squirrels go out and they start gathering up food for the winter, and they'll start storing it away here and there, you know, because it's going to be a long, tough winter. Nature can teach you, you know. If you start storing up for winter time, then you're going to be ready. And this information is essentially, you know, like the food that the squirrel's storing up. It could come back and save yourself there. I got somebody trying to call me here. There, I can't do that. It's a different deal. Eesh. You still there, Steve?
I'm already talking to somebody. I don't need another call at the minute. Maybe later.
Trying to figure out who's trying to call. It's from the meeting room. It might be Dublin.
Could be.
Anyway, whoever's trying to call in direct so I can add you to the call here on Skype. All right, well, where were we, buddy?
We were talking about the ways of obtaining hydrogen and oxygen in an emergency.
Yeah, there's if you live in any area where it's a lot of humidity, you can use that humidity to basically use a dehumidifier and get water. Now, there is another solution to some areas that aren't humid. if you was to dig, like, let's say, a root cellar like they used back in the old days, anybody who's ever lived in a basement home knows that because it's sitting down, it's cooler than it is outside. You actually start to build up humidity inside there, even though it might be dry outside. You build up a humidity on the inside. And so if you built you a root cellar and you actually ran a dehumidifier inside that, you could actually pick water up. And then every so often you go in there, you open the door and let a lot of fresh air back in, and it'll do the same thing. What do you think?
Oh, most certainly. I mean, if you just put a bit of imagination into it, there's loads of different ways that you can bring this stuff up. But it's all about what do you want to take responsibility for and what do you want to trust other people with.
Yep.
And part of the reason why we go out to work in the first place, a lot of us, is to pay bills. But if you find a different way of supplying yourself with those requirements that don't require a monthly bill, you're going to be a lot better off. I mean, when young people get married, buy a house, that sort of stuff, I mean, the first thing that they concentrate isn't about, you know, are we going to be able to grow food in this garden, or, you know, is this house going to be insulated well enough so we're not going to have to use a huge amount of money to keep it warm in winter, that sort of stuff. They sort of worry about what sofa they're going to have. But why people aren't moving into a house as a young couple and starting off implementing this technology, I don't know. And we should be supporting that too.
Well, I agree, brother. You know, if you, like I said, if you don't do it now and something really does happen, you know, we could very well be on the verge of World War III, you know. This may all be for nothing, because if we get into World War III and they start popping off nukes everywhere, you know, it's not going to be very, very, very good for humanity at all. That's for sure. And so, you know, with that said, I would say at least try, you know, try to start using these solutions, writing them down, putting them on your hard drive, and, you know, if you have to store your computer in a box, galvanized box in case of an EMP blast or whatever, but, you know, it's like wintertime, you don't stock up for wintertime and you get snowed in, you know where you stand, right?
Up to your eyeballs, isn't it? Hang on a second, I'm going to see if I can bring Dublin into the call.
Oh, great, because that's what I was trying to do. That's why I got distracted there.
Get hustled that out.
Well, you're listening to Shazia's Mad Science. We got Simply Steve, and we're trying to get Dublin in here as well. And so, like I said, folks, right now there's all kinds of solutions out there, all kinds of knowledge, all kinds of information, and as long as we share that information freely with one another and try to help each other out the best we possibly can, then, you know, we got hope for the future.
She's got Dublin.
Hey, Dublin, how's it going, brother?
That's good. I'm still down in Spain.
Cool. How's the weather in Spain?
Well, actually, today it's cooled up, but it's been hot up to recently and probably go hot again tomorrow. Just a bit of rain last night. But other than that, it's pretty good.
Well, did you save some of that rain for later?
Yeah, you have to. You got to get out there with your bucket and catch it, you know.
Hey, worst case scenario, at least you got something to drink or take a bath.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's a lot of underground water in Spain, but it's not suitable for drinking, you know. It's
right.
Not so much a shortage of water, but the shortage of good drinking water. So, well, in this place, the camping runs from the well, but you can't drink the water.
Well, then, brother,
there's no shortage of water.
You need to definitely look into filtration systems, then, because man, I tell you what, if you're standing on an ocean of water and you can't drink any of it, something's wrong.
I know, that's what's called a bad story.
Yeah, you know, I keep coming back to this story about Dubai. Have you ever done any research on that, on Dubai?
A little. I mean, they distill all the water directly from the sea. I know that.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because, You know, it's they're like in a desert climate, and they have their ingenuity is amazing. Each one of them skyscrapers out there literally have miles of pipe, and they recirculate water through these pipes to give everybody fresh water. And these pipes actually do several things. You know, it helps cool down, and they're self-built, self-contained water towers, so to speak. You know, a water tower essentially is there. You pump the water up at a high level, and then that way you have water pressure being able to go out to all the different houses and stuff like that. Well, they have them literally built into the buildings themselves, and they have huge desalination plants where they take water straight out of the ocean and basically make fresh water out of it. So, you know, the technology's there, you know. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, well, there's a new technology came out recently, and it's, you know, the carbon, what's called it, the new stuff. It's like flat plate stuff. I forgot the name. It's graphene.
Yeah,
graphene,
there you go.
Is the name. Apparently, they can now, using graphene, they will be able to reduce the price of distilling seawater by 99%. So it's going to become soon very, very cheap to distill seawater using graphene.
Well, see, it's another testament to all the ideas that are out there, man. We got to keep these things.
Yeah.
We got to keep these things going. We got to keep these ideas flowing. And that's one of the reasons why I love the Knights of the Round Table, is that when we get people from all different countries sharing different ideas, it's just amazing, because it's, you know, Steve's a vast wealth of information. He don't give himself much credit for it, but I he's always finding things that I may have overlooked, and you do as well, Dublin. And so with that said,
yeah, well,
all this
the more eyes and the more ears and the more people looking, the better.
Exactly. And, you know, the more solutions we put on the table, the better off for everybody.
Yeah. Actually, I came across a very interesting one there this week. In Australia, they're having this, like, exhibition for ecology and all that sort of stuff. But some guy has invented a machine where you squash the cellulose material from wood together without using any glue, and you can make it in any shape, you know, like seats and chairs, and there's no glue involved, there's no toxic chemicals, it's just some sort of process that he's invented of squashing the cellulose material together in a certain way that itself glues itself. So I do think that will probably become one of the most revolutionary things we'll see in a long time.
Oh, yeah, you could do a lot
with
that.
Wood in any shape you want.
You could do a lot with that. I mean,
it's
unlimited.
Ideas are unlimited. It's, I mean, you could make, a boat-shaped thing using wood and then cover the outside using fiberglass or stuff like that. But the stuff is, if you paint it, it's pretty impervious to, you know, it's like anything that's wood that's painted, it's pretty protected then.
Well, and then there's another plus to it that, you know, whenever your furniture gets old and looks like heck, you can use it for fuel source.
Well, not only that, but you can actually, you know, mush it all back down and reform it into another.
Well, yeah, you can do that too. So, you know, every time we all get together and we have these conversations on the Mad Science Channel or the Knights of the Round Table, it sparks off so much, so many ideas, so many new thoughts, that this is just a wonderful thing for me. How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, I'm quite... Yeah, into it. I mean, that's why we all tend to start meeting up, because that way we kickstart different ideas.
Well, yeah, you know, like you said earlier, you know, the more eyes you got on the situation, the more information you got going on. I keep saying this, I can't wait till Virtual Labs we get this thing up and running, because then people will be able to work side by side, you know, you and your lab over in your country and me and my lab over here, and we can actually show each other real time how to do this. You know, making videos is good because, you know, it documents what you've done, and people can, you know, reference that, but can you imagine a real-time lab where we actually build projects together?
Oh yeah, that's what we're going into, that kind of future with 3D technology and all that sort of stuff. It was actually a very good one, I thought. It's a joke one. They have this 87-inch screen now, which is so high definition it looks like the real thing. So they bring in people into an office to do a job interview, and on the wall is hanging this TV, and it's showing the outside world, you know, the city below. And so you think of the window, and then they have this dirty big meteorite coming across and crashing into the city, and this, you know, like an atomic bomb wave heading towards you. And of course, the people start panicking and diving under the chairs. And
oh, I would love to see that.
The screen fills up, and then they, the lights go out, and, you know, and then they put the lights on and they say, "Are you okay?" Yeah, yeah. And then all the guys rush in and, you know. Whatever, candid camera.
I love that. Do you have a link to that?
I don't. I only came across it yesterday. Unfortunately, it wasn't a YouTube one. It was more like an advertisement for the 87-inch high-definition television.
Oh, wow.
I'll try to see if I can find it while the show is on.
Yeah, if you find a link to that, share that with everybody, because that,
yeah,
you know, that would be hilarious. You know,
But I mean, the high definition is incredible, but I presume you got to pay big bucks. I mean, 87 inches is a big screen, and it's the latest and greatest technology.
Well, I'm thoroughly impressed with the technology, and it's a wonderful time for me, because back when I was a kid, I used to dream about what the year 2000 would be like. I figured we'd be in flying cars by then, but, you know, not yet. I mean, they're working on them. But, you know, just watching all the new cell phone technology and all the different things coming out, and the capacitor technology, you know, the supercapacitors that they got these days, it's just incredible. And then what you was talking about earlier, the new graphene technologies, you know, we're living in a golden age, man. I'm telling you, people should be glad that they're here and now, because, you know, we're getting experience of so many wonderful different things coming. You know, even if we have to deal with a lot of craziness in the world, to me, I still think this is a worthwhile time to be. What do you think, Steve?
I think we should specialize our efforts towards looking after ourselves before we worry about making money for other people.
And how, brother? I agree. And, you know, it's really important, because the whole monetary system, you know, it's all propped up with baling wire and duct tape and sticks and whatever the heck they can prop it up with. And you know that behind the scenes, all these bankers, they're putting their pennies in the pocket somewhere offshore or wherever to protect their stuff. But you, the average Joe, you're going to get caught in a bad spot if suddenly you go to the bank and there ain't no bank open, or you find out your whole entire life savings just went down the freaking toilet, so to speak. If you start thinking ahead of time, you know, everybody goes out and they buy car insurance, they buy house insurance, they buy life insurance and health insurance and everything under the sun, insurance for everything. But they don't insure themselves personally by, you know, maybe putting a few extra cans of food on your store or on your shelves in your pantry or something like that. And, you know, because you're relying on, I've had people tell me, well, if I need some food, I'll just go to the grocery store. Well, the grocery stores, believe it or not, only have 3 days worth of food on there. And so if everybody goes at the grocery store at once and empties off that shelf, you're looking at anywhere from a week, 2 weeks, to possibly months before that store shelf is stocked back up. And so, you know, the doomsday preppers, everybody laughs at them. Aha, you know, you're saving up all this stuff for the apocalypse. But I guarantee you, if all heck hits the fan, you're going to wish that guy was your best friend, because he's going to have things and supplies that you could have used, and chances are he's probably not going to want to share with you. Because, you know, I seen this video a long time ago, it was a little cartoon, and it was about all these animals in the forest, and they were all storing up their stuff, and this one rabbit was just, you know, being real lazy and everything. He was just sleeping through the whole entire summer and just running around having fun, hassling people trying to work, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And then wintertime showed up, and suddenly he was getting a bit hungry. You know, he didn't have no food. Now he's going around and he had to rely on the charity of others in order to take care of him. And, you know, whether you're, you know, being just lazy or whatever, if you don't pre-plan to some extent, you know, and we have so much as a blip in the system, you know, the lights go out, power grid goes down or whatever, and you ain't got nothing at all, then you too are at the mercy of whoever, you know. What do you think?
Well, I think that if we lived in a more equitable world, a lot of the time you spent at school under education would be teaching you things like plumbing and electricity. But they don't.
Well, you'd think that the common sense, if they really gave a damn about people, they would make sure that everyone had that particular knowledge in order to you know, be able to, if worst case scenario, you know, it's kind of like emergency management stuff. Everyone has their own skills, you know. One, you know, a fireman by himself can't keep the peace and fight the fire itself, but if you got a fireman and a policeman you know, something goes wrong, the fireman can do his job, the policeman can do his job, and the system works. But if nobody has any of these skills, then the whole system falls apart. I don't know if you ever did any research, but a long time ago, they were talking about how the Russian army, people in the Russian army would, if you were like, let's say you were a boiler technician or whatever, you were really good. You were top, you learned everything that there was to know about the boiler. And so if you was this well educated in there, that made you a really valuable part of the team. But however, everyone was specific to their own particular field. The electricians were the best of the best. The boiler technicians were the best of the best. But if that boiler technician, you know, for some reason gets killed, there's nobody to step in and take his job. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I honestly think that there would be a major problem if we could deal with a lot of these tasks ourselves, like plumbing and electricity, because there would be tens of thousands of people unemployed.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. That's the whole key, man. If you ain't got a job, you ain't got no money, there ain't no stores, there ain't no banks, and all you are is basically reliant on what you have as far as resources or your friends or whatever, You got to know something. You got to know how to garden. You got to know how to filter water. You got to know something about energy, because that knowledge is going to become literally your money. You know,
Shaziz, throughout history, we have had those skills. We have known how to build our own houses, how to grow our own food, how to dig a well to supply water to it, and they're the basic requirements. And we've done that for thousands of years, as individuals and as groups. So the question is why are we moving away from that? And what is the purpose of work? Is if all you're doing is supplying trade skills to people because they don't know how to do it themselves? If you took somebody from the 20th century and sent them back to the 21st century even, and sent them back to the 15th century and said, right, now go and create electricity. They would never, well, some people might be able to scrape together a few watts, but the majority of people wouldn't even have a clue where to start.
Well, and that's another scary thing about our education system, is the fact that they're not teaching children this kind of stuff in school, and they're essentially dumbing them down as far as math. You know, one of the mistakes I made when I was going to school was I found out about the Texas Instrument calculator. And once I found out about that calculator, I told myself, well, why do I need to study so hard at math? Because I can just use a calculator. Well, that's the problem. Everyone these days have relied so much, so heavily on technology. If they had to fend for themselves, that they go to the microwave to cook their TV dinner, and the microwave has no power to it, they're eating a cold, frozen TV dinner. What do you think?
I've seen the Hungry Man meals with 1 pound of real meat in them. I wouldn't want to live on it.
Well, I don't necessarily advise people go out and eat TV dinners because I don't know what all's in them. I would say read the warning labels and the possible side effects.
I'd say even the people that produce them are unsure about their original origin.
Yeah, and they probably wouldn't eat it either. You know, that's telling. Go to the factory where they sell these things and ask the employees as they're coming out, would you eat this? If they say no, then chances are you don't want to eat it either.
It just seems that the intellect and ability of the human race is being wasted in favour of a very small minority. And until we can get the idea into our heads that there's a lot of stuff we can do for ourselves that don't take years and years of study and aren't hugely expensive to do or even technically challenging, then, you know, perhaps we can sort of move forwards a bit. Because why do we go to work?
Well, right now, everybody's pretty much got themselves so embedded into the system that I guess the best example of why I can say that people don't get out of it is fear, you know? They're afraid because, you know, if you don't go to work, everyone knows if you don't go to work, then eventually they're going to boot you out of your house, they're going to turn your lights off, or you're going to run out of food and all that kind of stuff. And so people want security. They want to know that as long as they do this certain task, that they're going to have things. Well, even if you're that of that mindset and you have things because you are working and the system collapses, suddenly you're in a situation that, you know, you would go to work if you had a job, but you don't. And so you need to know these things in order to be able to survive. Best case scenario is everybody wised up, learned as much information, started sharing this information, and just literally walked away from the system. But, you know, like I said, people are so embedded into the system, they rely on it, you know?
Well, we give over our energies to corporations as a method of duty to our family, because if we don't work, we don't earn money. If we don't earn money, then you can't have nice things. Well, if you can find a better way, I'd like to know about it. But I'm really wishing for the day when we do have a better way than going out and working for a large corporation. Because what responsibility should you have that's highest to your corporation or employer or your family?
Are you familiar with the Amish?
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's an example to learn from. These folks are amazing in my book. You know, whether you like their lifestyle or not, these folks have been around for years and years and years, decades, and they don't subscribe to a corporation. They don't work for corporations. They work for the family. Everyone puts in their part, and they seem to be eating well. They seem to be healthy. They seem to be surviving just fine without all the modern technologies. And so with that said, you can learn a lot from some Amish folks.
Well, they do have a tendency not to vaccinate their children, and they're some of the healthiest kids in the country.
Yep, and, you know, there's another key point, you know. They've got schools. They teach their kids in their own schools and stuff like that. And these kids are together. You know, they're not like you go to a public school and there's like 30 or 40 students in the class to one student or for one teacher, and they're basically exposing themselves to colds and whatever. The Amish don't seem to have that problem, you know?
How can one person realistically assist 30 different people within, say, a time frame of an hour or maybe 2 hours?
Well,
it's not really possible, is it?
No, and then here in the United States, they've adopted that No Child Left Behind thing, and essentially it has cheated the kids out of a decent education, because there's a lot of kids that they push from grade to grade that don't know nothing about science. They don't know nothing about their rights or anything, or history, and it's a shame to say, but even some kids are graduating from high school that can't even read.
Well, the No Child Left Behind policy, to me, says, is a bit like saying, well, the children with special needs, we don't really want to pay for, so we're going to lump them in with everybody else and let them get on with it.
Yeah.
It's a money-saving exercise more than anything else.
Just pass them from grade to grade, collect the government handouts, and call it a day and say you've educated a child. But when you get a child who graduates from high school and can't read, and then that child goes out into the workforce and tries to get a job, and he asks the employer if they could read the application to him because they can't read, then you think that child's going to get the job?
Highly unlikely. But he will get a good job in the military shooting people.
Yeah, so there you go. What are the options for these the youth of today growing up? If they're not taught how to be self-contained like Steve's talking about, you know, then what are their options? Go into the military, work in a fast food place, taking out the trash or whatever. You know, not only is that dehumanizing, I mean, I know somebody got to take out the trash, and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to cut down on the guy who has to actually take out the trash, but at least teach these kids some skills in school, some real science, not the crap that they've been feeding these kids about bogus global warming and all that kind of stuff. I tell you what, brother. Global warming, to me, is one of the biggest pet peeves that I got. It aggravates me to no extent, and it's almost like a religion, man. If you go out there and you talk to anybody and you say you don't believe in global warming because of the science is just jacked up, man, they'll attack you like you wouldn't believe, man.
Well, there's always people with different beliefs in different areas of life. But I don't think that these people have got the level of sophisticated technology required to duplicate all of the environmental conditions of the Earth. And all they work on is mathematical models. And every model that they've ever managed to come up with, especially it's reported on the mainstream, seems to have been wrong. Financial models, weather models, all of these models work on basic parameters, and they don't really include enough variables to actually predict what's going to happen. So I have little faith or trust in a lot of it.
Well, and not to mention the fact that a lot of the numbers were fudged to begin with. So, and once you lose the trust of the public, how are you supposed to, you know, convince them that something's going on when it ain't?
Well, isn't scientific theory asking a question and then doing everything within your ability and intellect to prove yourself wrong?
I would think so.
If you and nobody else can prove that theory wrong, then it stands as accepted. But the amount of times that these mathematical models have been put forward as the definite information and been wrong, what point do we say, well, why do we keep giving these people lots of money? They keep getting it wrong.
Well, yeah, and then see.
Well, you can actually build your own mathematical model if you want.
Sure thing.
And very
even.
Yeah. Well, you know, the computers we got nowadays are very sophisticated. There's lots of stuff. I mean, the program you could make with a computer on weather and the climate would be as good as something that a whole bunch of scientists did in the 60s. I mean, or 70s. So you can build your own climate analytical model yourself, and very quickly when you look at it, it becomes obvious to you that there's no such thing as global warming, because if you build your own model, you have to go back to the basic mathematics, you know, where these guys get all their data from. And then you start looking at the formulas that they're using and the formulas other scientists are using. And very quickly you start to see, well, hang on, the formula they're using is very bizarre. It's got you know, a heavy lean on one part of the equation compared to all the other formulas. You know what I mean? And then when you look at that lean, and you discover basically they've amplified the amount of heat that carbon dioxide generates by a factor of 10 by tweaking its number in the formula. So, I mean, as I said to people, in every square meter on the planet, there is 10 tons of atmosphere in that column of air, reaching all the way up to about 30 or 40 miles. You've got 10 tons of air pressing down on that one square meter. And of that one square meter, that 10 tons, if it was liquid like water, well, you could say that 0.4% would be carbon dioxide, or something like 400 liters or 40 kilograms out of 10 tons is carbon dioxide. So you can start to say, well, hang on a second, 40 kilos out of a 10 tons, and 10 tons of it in liters is by 10,000 out of whatever, it's a big number anyway. It's not a lot. You know what I mean? So how could something that's so small be causing, you know, this particular problem? And where's the formula that tells you how much heat carbon dioxide makes? And then you discover that, in actual fact, carbon dioxide has reached its maximum at 208 parts per
million.
per million. Because what happens is, it's a bit like if you're in bed and you got two blankets, you're pretty well trapped all the heat you're going to trap. If you throw on four blankets, you're not going to be twice as hot. You're going to be a little bit more hot, but you're not going to be twice as hot. If you throw on six blankets, you're going to be only fractionally hotter. You know what I mean? It's, by the time you get to 10 blankets, you're pretty well trapped all the heat that you can trap. So even if you put on 40 or 100 or 1,000 blankets, you're not going to trap any more heat. You know what I mean? By the time you get to 10 blankets.
Well, and you hit a key point. You hit a key point, yeah, too, Dublin. Even with the 10 blankets on, you know, if CO2 had the capability of trapping the heat in, it also has the capability of keeping it out as well. And so, you know, that's the reason why you put a blanket on
it. It doesn't work that way. The heat's a funny sort of thing, because in actual fact, infrared is what basically heats us. The heat comes in from the sun as a certain form of light, and it actually has no effect until it hits the ground. It then heats the ground, and then it's called black body. If you actually took a big black ball in space and analyzed it, the results would be more or less the same as the sunlight hitting the Earth. It's the infrared that's leaving the ground going upwards that generates the heat. So it's mostly water that traps the heat. Water is so like 20 times more efficient at catching heat than carbon dioxide is. Carbon dioxide, if you look at the spectrum of what catches infrared heat, water catches something like 96% of it, or 94% of it, and carbon dioxide catches only 6% of that heat.
Well, you know, if you want to...
Carbon dioxide has reached its maximum at 280 parts per million. It's trapped as much heat as it can possibly can.
If you want to
so
test...
No matter how much carbon dioxide you put on the planet, you'll never heat it anymore.
If you want to test how efficient infrared heat is, go out and buy you one of them infrared heaters and spend about $300 or $400 or possibly $500 for one of them infrared heaters, and wait till the coldest day of winter and turn that thing on. First, it's going to take you quite a while to warm up, and then once you do get it warm up and comfortable in there, turn that thing off for a few seconds and see how long that radiant energy or that infrared heat lasts. It's almost instantaneously, as soon as you shut that thing off, it starts to get colder than crap back in your house.
Yeah, infrared is about the worst way you can possibly imagine of heating up something. So the idea that the Earth is going to get fried by, you know, or our goose is going to be cooked because we generate carbon dioxide, it's off the bloody wall.
Well, yeah, and here's another key point on this whole deal is, at the top of the Earth and at the bottom of the Earth were the less amount of sunlight. See, at the equator is the hottest point, obviously, because it's the closest point to the sun and it gets more sunlight. But at the top and the bottom, the temperatures don't change at the top or the bottom. They remain the same because it's not very much sunlight up there. And so what they want you to believe is that somehow or another, all this infrared heat is heating up to the planet to the extent that it's melting the ice caps up there. And basically, it's getting trapped within our atmosphere around our Earth. And so we're going to start boiling. But you know what? Take a pan and put it on the stove and turn it down to its very lowest setting and see if it takes 20 years to boil that water away. It don't take 20 years. And we've been talking about global warming for well over 20 years now. And, you know, we've seen a lot of cooling. There's parts in Europe who's literally had some really nasty weathers here of recent. What do you think?
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
We have minus 12 here. I don't know, about 2 years ago. There was snow everywhere. It was a nightmare. 2009, I think it was, actually. Usually it goes down to maybe 1 degree. But there were parts of Ireland that recorded temperatures as low as minus 18, which is seriously, seriously cold.
Yeah.
Didn't do anything because there was no wind.
So did you have to get out in the morning and scrape global warming off your windshield with an ice scraper?
Yeah, pretty much. It doesn't really snow in the south of Ireland where I live in Cork. You might get a couple of days of it, but that's it. But at that point, there was weeks of it. And it was just a totally unprecedented weather for normal conditions. And I've been here 15 years, so I've seen quite a few winters.
Well, like I said, at the top and at the bottom of the Earth, it stays cold. The ice caps may melt on one side, but they're freezing up on the opposite side because you can't change the fact of how cold it is at the top and the bottom. Because believe it or not, it's cold as crap in space. And so, at the top and the bottom, if you ain't getting the sunlight during the daytime, then you're not going to be warm. And we have other factors that actually keep us warm, such as our seismic activity with all the friction of the ground moving back and forth and the moon tugging on the planet, you know, keeping that friction going, plus the Earth having a molten core. And, you know, so we're lucky. We are extremely lucky that all these processes are working together to keep us as warm as we do. And so with that said, I'm looking forward to any type of global warming that's going to keep us warm.
A recent report released was saying that the increase in CO2 has had the positive impact of producing 11% more vegetation in the desert areas of the planet.
Well, yeah, man, because, you know, CO2 feeds the plants, which in turn release the oxygen that feeds us. Here's a key point. You know, it don't matter what country you're from. Go out and watch on the side of the road. Spend a week or so just paying attention to what's going on. Watch out on the side of the road and see how many times during the summertime that those mowers are out there cutting that grass. Because the closer you are to that road, the more carbon is in there, the more plant food that the plants get, and those weeds grow like wildfire right next to the road. You may have to mow your yard once every week or every 2 weeks, but out there, they're mowing the crap out of them because for some reason or another, those plants are doing real good alongside the road.
CO2 makes plants grow better.
Yeah.
In actual fact, in Dallas, they get high readings of carbon dioxide because it's like a big trap. It's mountains all around the city. The carbon dioxide gets trapped in there, and levels go to 500 parts per million or 600 parts per million. But it's a trace gas, so that's no effect on the people.
Well,
I presume the plants grow better in Dallas. Not Dallas, Denver City.
Dublin, when they use artificial CO2 systems in greenhouses, they pump it up to 1,500 parts per million. And
yeah,
the pump's great.
I worked in greenhouses in Holland, and they were always doing that.
Yeah, but the point is it replaces oxygen. Oh, right, but it displaces oxygen.
Yeah.
So it's a very good environment to be in at 1,500 parts per million. But five or six isn't a big issue.
The plants need to use less energy to get the carbon dioxide out of the air. If there's more carbon dioxide, they're spending less energy yanking the carbon dioxide out of the air and into their leaves. So they need to use less water, because water is part of the process of how they get the carbon dioxide out of the air. So it's a win-win for the plants, and then they can put that energy that they were normally wasting extracting carbon dioxide out of the air into growing. So
with that said, Dublin, are those folks in that particular area where the carbon dioxide, because it's heavier than the oxygen, displaces oxygen and kind of basically pulls up in low-lying areas, are those folks in that area choking out, or are they dying?
No, you can go to Denver anytime you want. It's easier for you to get to Denver than for me. Humans will not notice carbon dioxide levels until they reach something like 15% of the air.
Hey.
It has to be a lot of carbon dioxide before humans start to notice that there's something wrong with the air.
Yeah, you won't be able to breathe. You'll suffocate. So, with that said, the whole doggone pile of dominoes that they use, the mainstream scientists use to try to scare everybody into paying carbon taxes and such, it's all falling down on them, man.
Well, they keep changing.
So that's why what you said originally, it's a religion. And, I mean, in the beginning when I would say to people, well, I'm not sure, I'd be attacked. You know, you're a denialist.
Yeah.
Since when did science become a religion? You know, like, a denialist means, you know, that's totally religion logic. And so I spent more time researching the subject and then discovered that it was all complete pile of poop.
Yeah, I agree. What was you about to say,
the worst thing about the carbon dioxide problem is all the top universities you go in, they're all spouting this, and most of them actually even know that it's not true. But they're getting their big research grants. If they can prove that the carbon dioxide is affecting the honeybee in its travels around, or its sexual habits, or anything, as long as they can link carbon dioxide to something that's killing the animals in the animal kingdom, they're going to get a research grant.
Well, and there's
if they say carbon dioxide doesn't exist as a problem, they're going to be thrown into the basement and, you know, it's the dungeons of the university somewhere to, you know, repent until they come back and say, oh, carbon dioxide's killing us.
Well, what seems to be happening at Dublin is now they're saying, oh, well, CO2 isn't the actual problem. CO2 is causing methane to melt out of gas, out of ice. So methane is the problem.
Well, then we the three of us need to go into the cork business so that we can put corks where, you know, the cows and everything don't, basically, you know what I'm saying.
More methane comes from a cow's mouth, is because they've got four stomachs.
Well, I know, but you got to put corks in both ends. Now, I can't be held liable for any exploding cow due to a gas buildup, so we'll have to put a disclaimer on the cork, you know.
That's one of the things.
So they're now breeding genetically modified cows that make less methane.
Well, that's a real good piece of science, isn't it?
Yeah. The only thing I will say when I say every top university is every top university in the Western world. In Russia and Japan, they want nothing to do with this. They say carbon dioxide is the greatest load of horse manure. They don't want anything to do with it. You know, they've run the numbers, and quite logically, they come up with carbon dioxide has no noticeable effect that we're talking about.
Talking about CO2, Dublin, China has increased their CO2 output by 1,500% since, I think, 2003.
Yeah.
1,500%.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, it doesn't matter. The carbon dioxide level, once it exceeds 280 parts per million, it's not going to add any extra heat to the world.
No.
It's not going to have any noticeable effect. Like, you 99.99% of the heat have been trapped at 280 parts per million. Everything above that has no real effect that we're talking about.
Well, look at our...
In order to double the amount of carbon dioxide in the air, we would have to generate 50 times more carbon dioxide to double it, because the way the system works, the sea soaks up the carbon dioxide and the trees and all this. So it becomes like a mathematical problem. So when they talk about, oh, we double the CO2, we double the temperature of the world, you know, they've all linked it that way, and it's all gobbledygook. It's rubbish, Dave.
We'll look at our friend Al Gore, Dublin. He owns a nice condominium down in San Francisco, and by his own admission, if his predictions have been correct, he would have only been able to get into his apartment via submarine.
Yeah. Well, this is it. I mean, these are charlatans. They're snake oil salesmen, you know, from the past. That's basically where they are. And
the sun is salted, and the sun has nothing to do with the temperature of the Earth.
Yeah, well, you know,
that took me about 10 seconds.
They're not scientists. They're lunatics of some sort.
Well, no. So with that said, guys,
the exchanges. That's what they are. Blood and Gore is the company name of a carbon credit exchange set up by Al Gore.
With that guys, they're trying to sell you water that nature provides for free. They're selling you electricity that nature provides for free. They're selling you now you got to pay to breathe via the carbon tax. And so, you know, if you speak any common sense about against global warming or climate change and all that kind of stuff, you essentially commit scientific blasphemy and need to be flogged or something like that. So, with that said, this is all the more reason why people need to start learning about alternative energy and stuff like that, because eventually their stupidity is going to get away from them. And when it does... Guess what? You're standing there holding a bag, because these folks have already built their own bunkers. They've already stashed away their own food supplies and such. And they're not going to share it with you, because you're essentially one of the bottom feeders that need to be depopulated. What do you guys think about that? Am I insane?
No, that's their plan. That's their plan. And that's why I do my best to fight them at every possible opportunity. In their religion, they believe that only they will inherit the world. In their book of religion, the evil shall inherit all the world. That's what their book says. You know, our book says otherwise. Our book is saying, the meek shall inherit the world. Well, they're on a different book, you know, Satan's book or whatever you want to call it. Book.
The whole funny thing about them inheriting the world is, just imagine the world they're going to live in. Once somebody in their particular version of the world gets sick, oh well, we can't. You're taking up needed medical supplies. If you're an old dude, you need to go. So you ever see that old movie called Logan's Run?
No, I didn't.
You know which one I'm talking about, Steve?
Yeah, but let me just give you a quick definition of what I think is insane. On one hand, they expect us to pay a huge range of punitive taxes to stop the planet warming up, but then they're fracking. And if I can describe fracking in an analogy, which I think works quite well, it's like you've got this nice little thatch cottage with a well outside that you get all your water from, and everything's lovely and comfortable and the rest of it. And you're sitting out in your back garden one day, and there's this big hefty fella comes in with his kids, and they step up on the lip of the well and start peeing in it. You say, "Yeah, well, will you stop your lads peeing in the well? I've got a drink out of that." And he says, "No, it's all right. You can buy some filters from me to clean it with." That's literally what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're going to...
Fracking is got nothing to do with getting gas. It's to do with scorched earth policy. they're trying to make all the water contaminated so that you can't use it, so you have to buy water from them. And they'll have the little supply, some pristine lake up somewhere in the world that they'll sell all this pure water. Because they've gone around all of America and Canada and the rest of the world and fracked it so that all the water's contaminated.
Well, Dublin, you have to be aware that the Bush family bought 100,000 acres in Venezuela above the country's biggest natural aquifer.
Well, and proof of what you're saying right there, just think about how much a bottled water, one bottle of water cost you these days.
I was talking about that the other day, Shazis. Currently here, a litre of diesel is about €1.52. And a litre of petrol is about €1.62, but half a litre of water is €1.80. So they're actually charging you €3.60 for a litre of water, say, from the local store, and that's twice the price of the fuel to run your car.
Do you see anything wrong with that picture?
Yeah, I mean, they're taking us for a ride in a big way. A substance that two-thirds of the planet is covered in costs more than oil, which they have to go out, explore, drill, refine, and then transport to a point of sale.
Well, here we go. See, nature has provided all the resources, and the money men at the top have figured out a way to not only cheat you out of your hard earnings via giving you, like, copper-coated zinc for a penny and... God knows what they make the quarters and the nickels out of nowadays. They don't even use the, if it says nickel, chances are it's probably not all nickel. And if it says it's copper, chances are it's probably not all copper. And so they're finding ways by which to give you funny money, get filthy, stinking rich, buy everything that they need, and leave you hanging with the bill when it's all said and done. They're charging you to breathe. They're charging you for everything under the sun. And so, if that isn't a good reason to start preparing, you know, your cupboards with a little extra food, or learning a little bit of extra stuff for alternative medicine and, you know, alternative energy, then I don't know what to tell you, man, because the system can't keep going the way it is.
No, it comes to a point of fundamental failure where we just can't maintain it anymore. I mean, yeah. The planet will survive. I don't think they've got the inclination to actually physically destroy the Earth itself. But whether the species will carry on for much longer the way it's going, I don't know.
Yeah,
90% of all species that ever existed on the planet are now extinct.
The best example of what you're saying, Steve, is the goldfish in the bowl, you know? Nature being outside that bowl. If nature didn't come in once in a while and put some fresh water in that bowl, then we'd be screwed. And so with that said, in all the cities and towns of the world, mankind is essentially peeing and pooing in their own fishbowl, and basically that's why everything looks like heck. But if you go out to the country and see what nature can accomplish, you'd be surprised how much easier it is to breathe out in the country as opposed to living in right in a city.
Well, just to give a final thought on those mathematical models, a computer will only tell you to do, it will only do what you tell it to. And if you don't have all of the parameters, or you choose to perhaps forget to include some of the parameters in the model that you're building, it will not be accurate. And I do not believe that science and technology have discovered everything there is to know about this Earth yet.
Oh, no, they're still chipping away at an arrowhead as far as I'm concerned.
There are a lot more complicated systems on this planet than we currently understand, and them as well. With all their advanced technology, there are, unless you can actually build a planet, you don't really know how it works.
Well, you know,
but it's amazing how good a planet you can build in mathematics. I mean, if you start off with a planet that's made of steel, for example, call it a black ball, and you put the air and the atmosphere and so forth on it, you can model the stuff on that planet. And you can do absurd things, like you can increase the carbon dioxide to 50% to see what results you'll get. And it's when you do that kind of mathematics, you discover that carbon dioxide has very little heating effect at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he, well, sent to the air as carbon dioxide, you barely melt the temperature go up.
If I was to make if I was to make a mathematical model of Steve Hope, I'd have the bronze skin of a Grecian warrior. I'd have Arnold Schwarzenegger's muscles, and I'd have Einstein's brain, along with Tesla's aptitude in a mathematical model. But in reality,
hey, you know, Steve, I make Arnold Schwarzenegger look like a big dude.
Yeah. What is it? Monty Python's Meaning of Life makes Ben-Hur look like an epic.
Oh man, so you know, this has been great. I'll tell you what, man, this system out here, the way that they got it set up, isn't going to benefit humanity. Mother Nature's in control, and the sooner people figure that out, the better. You know, but they're going to keep on doing all this stuff. They're going to charge you carbon tax. They're going to complain about global warming whilst getting themselves into war to fight over somebody else's resources. Do you realize how much carbon footprint it's got to be to take a country into war with all the bombs going off and, you know, depleted uranium being used as bullets and all the crazy stuff that it entails and going to war? How is that going to benefit and reduce a carbon footprint? Anybody? Well, I guess if you go over and blow somebody's house up and they're not using electricity, you kind of reduce the carbon footprint. But then again, if you got F-16 jets and all these different stealth bombers and stuff flying through the sky, well, you're getting a little bit more, and then you're going to balance that out by bombing somebody else's factory, so you might take a little bit of carbon footprint off there. But then after you blow up a few cars in the neighborhood, you're going to start a few tire fires and put some more carbon up in the air. And so with that said, where's the gain?
Let's not forget that these people that keep banging on about global warming also consider Genghis Khan because of the amount of people he murdered. I mean, it was supposedly that many people that died on these rampages that the carbon footprint of the globe shrank by about 2%.
Man, you know what? Genghis Khan needs to get the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, these are the people that are coming out with all this rubbish. You know, be wary of Greeks bearing false gifts.
Yeah, like a Trojan horse.
Oh yeah,
I tell you, man, it's just common sense. Where is it gone? We got to keep we the people full of common sense, hope, peace, and love. Because I'm tell you what, these knuckleheads up the top, they can't even tie their own shoes straight without messing something up. So with that said, and we're starting to get down to the wire here, man. You got anything else you want to talk about before we run up out of here? Don't everybody jump on a horse at once. I wouldn't want anybody to get hurt.
You go for it, W. Or rather not.
Let's see, I would say that I'm working on a problem in Ireland right now that could be important. They're planning to run an air show on December 15th, which is next week, where they commemorate World War II.
You mean
Ireland is neutral, and we had nothing to do with World War II, but they're having an air show for it. And everything points to the whole idea of the air show is to make a 9/11 event where they'll crash one of the aeroplanes into the financial center.
Oh, great.
They've got a big hole in their accounts, and they want to cover it up, and like 9/11, where they hit the buildings to make sure all the computers lost all the information on the $2.5 trillion defense budget. I think they've got a problem, and they're trying to get rid of it.
Well, and that's,
so they invented it.
Dublin, I would like to point something out to people. If they come out with this excuse that the financial sector of Dublin was hit by a plane and all the financial records are gone, it's absolute hogwash.
Yeah.
I tell you what.
Oh, we know that's hogwash.
But I need
anybody knows that everything's in the cloud.
Calm down a second, Dublin.
Let me explain to
people. We can't both talk at the same time. Every single server that is in the financial district
has a backup server off-site as under law, specifically for these contingency events. So they'd have to bomb about 15 parts of Dublin at the same time to get rid of all those financial records.
Yeah. People,
well, you and I know that.
Yeah,
the press, will be told all the information was there, and oh, it was those Irish, and now we got to forget that. So we'll drag Ireland out of neutrality to go and fight the bloody war in.
Well,
wherever it is that's trying to get us to go to.
If you look at their track record already, I mean, the bankers have basically bailed themselves out with taxpayer money all around the globe. They not only bailed themselves out with your money, but then they turned around and repossessed your property. And so, with that said, it must be good to be the bankers, because no matter what you do, if you gamble and lose, you get paid. Is that crazy?
Another point, Shaz, is if they do lose their banking records, they can always ask the NSA for a copy.
Oh, yeah, because the NSA copies everything. You can always trust your government.
Red. You know, when they're dead on the red, you flip the button and everything changes to black.
Yeah.
They never win. So if you're, for them, they can always win. Everything's rigged. And for us, you can never win in this casino. But the trouble is, we're in the casino. We can't get out of it, you know, if you know what I mean. Like, you and me and a few others with technology, homebrew technology, can get out of it. But the vast majority, because we've been dumbed down, would find it hard to get out of the casino.
Yeah, you put your dollar on the table, they'll snatch it and then put it in their pocket.
It's the old saying, the South Park one, you know. He goes in to the bank manager to invest his first $100 that his grandmother gave him, and the bank guy says, "I'm going to invest in this and invest in that," and it's gone. And it's gone. You know, that's what happens to your money, and it's gone. You know, putting your money into the bank is, and it's gone.
Isn't the Federal Reserve a bit like a crooked roulette table, where you put your bets down, the guy in the Federal Reserve gets a little white ball, flicks it, starts spinning round, and then stands there with his foot on a magnet under the table?
Oh, yeah, and not only that, whenever you leave the IRS, whenever you first go to the IRS building, they got two big burly guys on each side of the door who pick you up by your feet and shake all the chump change out of your pocket, and then after they show you all the money that you still owe via your taxes and stuff, on the way out they trip you up and check for any gold teeth.
Yeah, that's the same worldwide.
So it's an epic mugging from start to finish.
Never take your grandma to the IRS if you want her ever to eat again.
Yeah, that's it, because they'll take whatever she got. If you got a glass eye, the IRS has got it.
Oh, they love gold teeth.
Yeah, they'll attach anything, man. It's like an octopus, or, you know, the guy's got duct tape on their hands and reach out and grab everything that they can.
That's the way the world goes, isn't it? We keep giving our energy and support to people that don't deserve it and shouldn't have it.
Well, that's why we got to keep on doing what we're doing, and that's why I do what it is that I'm doing, is trying to bring about some sort of positive change in this world. And it's a little tough to do what it is. It's a little tough to do what it is that we're doing. But check that link out. For if you can't wait for an alternative deal, or you ain't got the technology to build it yourself, and you can actually afford to buy yourself one of those doggone home generating systems that'll kick on when the power goes off, do something. Get you some solar or some wind going on. Do something, because the system's going to shut it off and basically have you at their mercy if you're not prepared.
If you get a chance, Shaziz, look up on YouTube graphene and how to build supercapacitors itself, and how to build batteries itself from graphene. But also, it's the graphene solar panel looks like it gives out 10 times more power than even normal solar panels, maybe even 50 times more power. Now, don't ask me what's going on. I've only discovered it recently.
Yeah.
But very small panels, solar panels, look like they're going to give tremendous power. That could be why the Spanish government went and slapped tax on it, because they're in the know that there's the graphene technology is about to arrive.
Yeah, they're even trying to tax free energy, brother.
Yeah, but the thing about graphene is it looks like you can build it yourself at home. You don't have to buy it from the factory.
Oh,
I can't say that, but it's like you can build it at home. So, you know, how about researching graphene? Research everything you can about it.
Dublin?
Yeah.
Are they not currently charging people in Spain for solar energy that they're collecting so many cents per?
Yeah, they're already taxing people. I think it's 10 cents per kilowatt that they generate from solar power or from any alternative source.
All right, guys, we're down to it. So you got any last words? We've got a minute before I need to start rolling up out of here to get ready for the Beverly's Hope show. She's worked real hard on this show, and hopefully we get a good smooth transition. So you guys got anything to say before we peel out?
The world we live in today, even if you manage to collect and harness free energy from the sun, wind, or any other source, the governments are so desperate to keep you under control that they're even trying to tax that now.
Yep.
Keep fighting back. That's all we can do. Keep fighting back.
All right, guys. That's an awesome show, and thank you very much for being on here. And you're listening to Awake Radio, Shaziz Radio, We Roar Radio, No Borders, and many other networks rebroadcasting. Thanks to everybody who made this possible. So with that said, you guys keep on researching out there, and everybody, peace and love to the world, and try to put some extra something in, on your shelves just in case. You know, we're not doomsdayers or fear-mongers. We just want you to be prepared for any natural or man-made disaster, and all you get to do is look out and see the way society is going and know that we've got a few problems on the way if we don't pay attention. So, yeah, everybody take care. Thanks, Steve, and thanks, Dublin.
Throughout humanity's existence on Earth, there have been rulers and there have been the slaves. Which line do you fall into? An easy question with a not-so-easy answer. The fact of the matter is that by merely being able to listen to the sound of my voice automatically puts you into what I call the real 1%. Nearly 7 billion souls on this tiny speck of sand in this universe, most of them, nearly 6.5 billion, try to scratch out a living on less than $2 per day. The disparity between the haves and have-nots is incredibly wide. Yet, you are the 1%. The 1% which has access to clean water, food, electricity, internet, education, the list goes on and on. Daily, we're conditioned to make money, pay our taxes, because it's patriotic. Buy things we really don't need, and to teach our children to do the exact same thing. We live in a world where they're told our personal self-worth is measured by the money we have and the things we own, sometimes not realizing we really don't own anything. After all, we can't take any of it with us when we leave this little speck of dust at the end of the day. We're made to believe that we are unfortunate to those who have more wealth than we do. We are made to believe that because of this disparity, we are the downtrodden, the disadvantaged, without ever looking at the full picture. We are tricked in divisiveness between left and right, between him and her, us and them, between black and white, where there really is no black and white, just many shades of gray. And yet we still run on a treadmill like little rats in a cage. We wake up, we work, we pay tax, we go home, we buy stuff to fill an empty hole in our souls. And the cycle repeats. Instead of doing a more intelligent thing of downsizing, doing with less and helping fellow humanity, we keep running on the treadmill. Bigger houses, fancier cars, bigger TVs. The biggest step to finding a solution is to realize a problem exists. The next step comes from within. I'm Kent Anderson, and you've been listening to Shouted from the Mountain.
something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. A field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.